back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 174. Playoffs started today. Lots of fun on the diamond. And we're here to recap our beer bets from 2024. 10 bets. We'll see who came out victorious. And we won't just be lazy and say this versus this. It's we'll actually break them down and talk about the players and see what went wrong, what went right, or something along those lines. You can find me on Twitter at BDentric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how we doing, my friend?
We're doing good. I'm looking forward to the show tonight, mostly because, you know, not to spoil anything, but I do think the best man won this series of beer bets in 2024. You know, listeners might find out who it is by the end of the show, but I'm looking forward to counting how many drinks I'll be getting from you in Arizona in what, 1 month?
1 month,
just over a month away from first pitch. So, and no, we are less than a month. It is this month.
Yep, it'll be August 31st for some. It'll be November 1st for us. So a month away.
October 31st.
Yeah, for some. November 1st for us is what I said.
You said August.
Yeah, no. November, October, it's all the same, right? But we are in the wonderful best month of the year in October. Playoff baseball. You know, someone turns 41 pretty soon. It's just all the fun stuff in the world.
Ouch.
But before we get started on our beer bets, you mentioned FPAS. They have a flash sale going on. Don't know if you want to hit more on that real quick. But
good call. We do have a flash sale through Wednesday. So there's $100 off First Pitch Arizona registration if you're one of those last-minute planners who said maybe, you know, you missed out on the early price deadlines or whatever. But $100 off. Again, First Pitch Arizona. All the details are on baseballhq.com. If you have any interest in going, you can DM us with any questions. But registration and all the details are at First Pitch at baseballhq.com. And we are having our live show in a little over a month, which is going to be awesome too. So looking forward to that and golf and everything. So,
yep, going to be awesome as usual. And before we get to the beer bets, we wanted to say a thank you once again. A lot of awesome comments, testimonials, whatever you want to say it, from the listeners. I know Ryan wanted to hit on this, so the floor is yours, my friend.
No, yeah, it was just really cool, especially like at the end of the year. I know everyone kind of, you know, just screenshots of their standings and all this stuff and gives thank yous and that sort of thing. And it was just cool to see and hear from a lot of you all out there that, I guess listen throughout the season, which is awesome. And some folks who we've heard from throughout, some folks who we really haven't heard from throughout the year. And then it's just really cool to, you know, kind of get those messages that our Fab Show helped or whatever, that they had fun listening to us, yada, yada, yada. And ultimately that is why we do the show. We love to hear back from you guys and gals who not only, you know, won their league or did well, but also just had fun doing it. I think that's kind of the ethos of this show, is that, you know, that combination of both. So it's been pretty cool these last couple of days hearing from listeners out there saying that we helped in some way to win their league.
Yep, totally agree. It's been great to hear even some listeners with the comment tonight that made me chuckle before the show from Boom Zoom saying thank you for the pods. He got 2 golds, a silver, and a bronze. Best season he's had yet. And he might grab himself a fought ribeye, PFAADT. So a fat ribeye, but Brendan Fott style, which is great to hear, because that means you guys do listen and pay attention to the show and know kind of our, I guess, inside jokes or players we like or those kind of fun things. So pretty cool you guys succeeded and enjoyed, like Ryan said, is that's the biggest thing, is getting some enjoyment out of our shows a couple times a week. And I think these beer bets will make you guys enjoy a few things as well. At least it'll make somebody enjoy something on this show. But let's get at it, Ryan. Let's recap some beer bets. 10 bets this season. Some started early, some throughout the season. I like to challenge, and not always to the best of my abilities on this show. A couple I'd like to take back quickly, like Bo Bichette and some others, but we will get to all of that. Any thoughts before we get in here and start kind of comparing the two sides and seeing who won and who lost and why?
No, I'm glad I actually just recorded these as I was, you know, throughout the year, come up either like a preview or we would just be randomly talking about two dudes and disagree on something and let's do a beer bet. I had a little Google Doc the whole season that I just kind of wrote down what the players were and what the bet was. And so I feel like we probably initiated more than 10, but I captured 10 at least some of which we've been talking about kind of throughout the second half of the season. It is kind of funny. So yeah, six in the preseason that we made, four in season. It is funny to look back at some of these, especially the preseason ones. And it does, it's just funny too, like in draft season, everyone knows everyone's ADP and everything's so set in stone. And, you know, 6 months later, it's like, what were we thinking with some of these? But it's not just our beer bets. It's, you know, why did I pick this guy or that guy, whatever. 6 months ago, it seemed like a sure thing. And now it's like, damn. So yeah, we will revisit some of the good, the bad, the ugly on all of these. And I guess payment is, say one of us beats the other one by one or two. Does that mean we're just paying out that one or two beater or high noon at first pitch, or are we just, what are we doing? How are we resolving this?
I'm pretty open to anything here. If we say it's 5-5 finish, we can buy each other five.
Buy each other five. That's probably the bait. That's,
yeah. Let's do it that way. Have some fun in that regard. So at least we all have a little enjoyment and get to enjoy some of the victory. Maybe some more than others on this show.
But, and actually, yeah. One thing that this parlays with what we were saying earlier about hearing from listeners. I'm already one up on the beer bets because dear listener Martin Sikulski, who is in our Above in the Bloom listener league,
and golfing Martin, with us,
and golfing with us at first pitch. We had a beer bet that I would whoever finished higher in the Bubba and the Bloom overall would get a high noon from the other one after golf on Sunday, November 3rd at First Pitch Arizona. And I edged out Martin by two.
And I guess it fell apart like the last week too. Like he tweeted about it. It was a rough one for him.
It's a damn shame, Martin. I feel for you, but
hey, Martin, when we get to the last beer bet here, I understand your pain. How it fell apart at the end. I get it. I get it completely. So
yes.
We will get, because yeah, we'll get to that. I don't want to spoil the cliffhanger at the end here. But let's get to the first one. This was a rather easy one on the docket here. And it was our first base preview show. And it was Paul Goldschmidt versus Christian Walker. I had Christian Walker. Ryan had Paul Goldschmidt. Ryan was very adamant on Paul Goldschmidt this year. So, Ryan, I'll give you the floor first to discuss Paul Goldschmidt if you'd like.
Dude, honestly, so we'll go back. We'll go back to, hold on a sec. I'm going to pull up ADP just to give, just because, again, it seems so obvious right now, Christian Walker over Goldschmidt. But going back, Christian Walker in Draft Champions League, so the draft and hold, which is kind of what we were looking at way back when we were previewing positions. Christian Walker was a 96 ADP and Paul Goldschmidt was an 84 ADP. So you were actually, you know, I was playing with the odds because Goldschmidt was slightly more expensive, and that just totally flattened on its face. So kudos on that one. It actually was a little bit closer than I thought, mostly because in the second half Walker was hurt. Yeah, despite Walker getting hurt, he's still, let's see. So on the Rasball Player Rater, Christian Walker was the 97th overall. So he fully returned his ADP, which is basically what you want in the top 100. Finished the number 11 first baseman. Again, could have been much better if not for the injury. And realistically, on your team, did better than that, depending on who you replaced him with. Paul Goldschmidt finished 141 overall, number 16 first baseman. Not awful. Not awful.
What she drafted him for.
Hit 269, 11 home runs, 7 steals in the second half. So somewhat recaptured something, but this was a shellacking, I will admit.
Yeah. I should have taken a note of what the difference was in their respective statistics, or I guess overall rankings, before Walker got hurt, because it wasn't close at all. It was brutal.
Walker was a top five first baseman, top three.
Yeah, exactly.
Fairly deep into the season.
Yeah. Still played 130 games, 26 home runs, 84 RBIs, hit 251. But yeah, it was quite a bummer for Christian Walker as the season came winding down. He returned on September 3rd. So he missed the entire – went on the IL July 29th. So missed a ton of time, over a month of baseball. And kind of platooned for a bit with Josh Bell when he got back, was never really there. But before he went on the IL, as of June 29th, .254 average, 23 homers, 71 RBIs. So only had three homers and 13 RBIs in the month of September. So it kind of tells you where things went in September for Christian Walker. But dude's a monster. Really curious to see how that, if people look at the end game totals or pay attention to how things were when we start talking draft day. Because if it's big ifs, we talk about it a lot, but if he gets two more full healthy months of the season, we're talking about a what, closer to 40 home run guy, like 35 to 40 home runs, well over 100 RBIs, well over. And that's a heck of a ball, a heck of a pick at that point. So yeah, Christian Walker is pretty good. And Goldschmidt, he's going to be looking for a new home this year. So is Walker, actually. He's a free agent as well.
That's what I was going to add. Both of these guys are likely on different – definitely Goldschmidt, it sounds like, and probably Walker. Walker's going to get paid. I don't know if the Diamondbacks – my man Ken Kendrick bashing
free agents. Oh, man, after Jordan dude, I can't wait till Jordan Montgomery takes his player option, comes back, deals. It's a whole spring training, deals, and then – when Kenny Boy wants to renegotiate, hey, you want to come back and be like another like ace to our staff? And he gives him the biggest middle finger on the face of the planet. I cannot wait for that.
Yeah, for those that don't know, so Ken Kendrick, the owner of the Diamondbacks, was on a radio interview or whatever and pretty much just bashed Jordan Montgomery. Took the blame for signing him because it was, I guess he said, his call as the owner. But yeah, that was pretty funny. And probably, does not help with future free agent negotiation. So Christian Walker's probably looking at that and okay. But he's going to get paid.
He is going to get paid. That is for sure. So anything else you'd like to add on this Goldie versus Christian Walker situation?
No, we've got Michael in the chat saying, man, I'd wish I'd taken Walker over Goldie. And that is absolutely true, even though Walker was going around later than Goldie in draft. So you got me on this one. You are one up. It's 1-0 Bubba. Through one. Got
to get him somewhere because I'm about to lose one here. Zach Geloff on our second base preview. We had a bet. I was still a believer. You kept telling me he's not good. He gets no runs, no RBIs, Oakland this, Oakland that. And I'm like, yeah, but he still can hit for a decent average. There's tons of power and speed. Still a good ball player. And the bet was, would Zach Geloff return his ADP? Ryan, what happened on this one?
He did not return his ADP. Zach Geloff was drafted as the number 13 second baseman, finished 21st, did miss some time. So you do, Bubba, if you were uber competitive and wanting to challenge any of these results, you could say Geloff might have gone off on that month that he missed. I think it was like a month, an oblique or something. But no, the production was not there for Geloff. Hit .211, 17 homers, 25 steals. So the power speed into what you were saying, power speed was still there, and honestly could be a 30-35 stolen base guy next year. If we're talking more like general takeaways, I just think that the plate approach was so bad for Zach Geloff, that, and he's such a young player, that once kind of the book came out on Geloff on what he does at the plate or doesn't do, major league pitchers, I just think, ate him up. So that's one thing I'm going to have in the back of my mind for next year, not really just Geloff specifically, but any young guys with a plate approach like that, super high whiff rate, chase rate, all that stuff, could be tough sledding in the second year.
Yeah, up to 34.4% strikeout rate with the A's last year, 27.3. So that's quite the jump, one would say. But the power speed, I love, 60 runs scored, was also, pretty good after all the previous seasons we talked about. But it was all about the power and speed. And the injuries obviously did not help. I'm not going to say that's the reason why things changed. But I will say he finished the season much better in September and October. Mm-hmm. He hit .253, only one home run, but six stolen bases. So we saw, because he started out .196, .153 to start the year, .240 of .165. But that .253 finish gave me a little optimism on what we saw from Zach Geloff. Again, he's still a young ball player, so I'm not going to like write him off. But I do agree that the plate approach is 100% less than ideal on this one. And if we just look on the other numbers here, September, October, still had a 33.3% strikeout rate. So it wasn't great by any means in that regard, but still showed the improved batting average, I'll take as a plus. But he improved his average with a decrease in power. So that was kind of an interesting offset there.
That's one thing. Yeah. If I if I'm in on Geloff next year, I need to, I mean, I haven't done any deep dives or anything yet for 2025. It's just, did any of the plate discipline metrics improve in the second half? Or like, I'll pull up some rolling graphs and kind of see what that looks like. But I don't know. I mean, next year Geloff could be, and I don't want to focus too much on next year, but the speed that he brings with that move from Oakland to Sacramento, that's going to help, but the plate approach can only take you so far.
And as Michael in the chat here says, Norby has a potential to be next year's Geloff. I know Fitzgerald's been mentioned in that discussion as well. Michael C. wrote an article on the next year's Zach Geloff over at Rotoballers. So go check that out if you want to see some more on that goodie. So now the score is 1-1 after two beer bets, Ryan. 1-1. I'll let you take the next one here, because this one was, it was close, but when you really broke it down, wasn't as close as it looks like.
Right. So there were a couple that, and we'll get to one later, but there were a couple that I think we both kind of hit pretty well. It's just, in this case, mine hit even more pure than yours, I guess. So we were going back and forth on our outfield preview episode debating Juan Soto versus Aaron Judge. We're both going middle, late first round. And I took Judge, you took Juan Soto. And it was like, you're happy with either one. Like, both of them, I think we both made good arguments for our guys. And at first I was like, well, maybe this is a push because they were both so good. But then you look at it and like Aaron Judge. So this is by the Razzball Player Rater. Soto finished sixth overall, Judge second. Not too much difference there, but the gap in actual dollars earned was 20 more bucks. So Judge earned $60 this year to Soto's only, again, in air quotes, you're happy to get a $40 player at the end of the first round. But I will take the Aaron Judge, you know, beer bet win. But this was a good call, I think, for both of us.
I think where Judge overperformed what I expected, 322 batting average.
Yes.
That was, you know, 267 last year, 311 in his MVP season. But other than that, nothing close to 300, basically, prior to that. 322 is impressive. Dude walked 19% of the time also for the second straight year. So he's an OBP machine as well. Tossed in 10 stolen bases, 58 bombs, second most of his career. But that 322 batting average, that was tremendous from Aaron Judge. That shocked me a ton. And that's saying a lot, because Soto still hit 288. That's like the best he's hit since 2021. He had a career-high 41 home runs and struck out 16.7%. Like, Soto was great. But that Aaron Judge batting average, that was wild. And it's also one of those where it's like, do you trust that next year? As like, he's still great, he's still gonna be a top pick, I'm not gonna deny that at all, but when you're starting to like pick between players, that's an interesting thought process for the offseason.
There was also this going around, and I forgot about this now, but there was, I think, quotes back way back when saying Judge, because he was coming off the ankle, mm-hmm. and was like, the ankle's still not right, but I'm gonna play. And it was like, whoa. that turned out to not. It's just funny how we analyze, probably overanalyze every single like injury tidbit that we hear in January, February. Turned out to not really be an issue for Aaron Judge. Still stole 10 bases in addition to everything else he did. But I think that was another kind of reason to be a little bit skeptical in the first round. And I think what you were saying, kind of the case against Judge. My where I was wrong with Soto, I didn't think he'd hit 288. I thought with the move to Yankee Stadium, I thought 40 homers was certainly in play, but Yankee Stadium for lefties, because of the short right porch, for batting average, isn't that great of a park. It's actually one of the worst parks for left-handed hitters for batting average. So I thought Juan Soto, with this uber patient plate approach and lower batting average outlook, like, I thought that was my kind of strike against Soto and why I went Judge over Soto. And that was wrong, because my man had a monster season. So I don't know. Both had good calls there.
It's pretty interesting looking at Soto's numbers. Like, last 3 years, his BABIP's been below 300, usually above 300 guy. That's when he's also been hitting above 300 for a couple of years. But a guy with his hit tool, like, everyone raved about his hit tool, and still very good. I'm not going to say it's not, but when you break it all down and he just doesn't get it, but man, 128 runs scored, 109 RBIs. Like, we both said, like, 144 RBIs for Judge. My God. You can't really go wrong with either one, obviously, but a $20 difference is pretty crazy. That's pretty impressive from Aaron Judge. He was obviously the winner in this one. But neither one of them cost you your team. Let's put it that way. If you, no. if you picked one or the other, that was
you're happy with either pick. Cause yeah, they were going, I think 7 and 8, like right next to each other. So,
yeah, it'll be interesting to see where does Juan Soto land next year? Free agent wise, not fantasy wise, free agent wise, because that could make things slightly entertaining as well. All right. This one Ryan lucked out on so much.
What?
So much.
Dude, you're killing
me. This one, like, who saw this one coming? Tell you what.
I was going to do another beer bet over under when you'd start pulling the luck card. How many bets we go in analyzing before you start saying I get lucky. So 4 was the answer. Okay.
Yeah, over under 3.5 was the line. I have to make fun of this just because the bet was Tyler Glasnow over under 134 innings pitched. I took him, or no, what was it? Over under 150, sorry, 150 innings pitched. I took the over, saying he's healthy. He's with the Dodgers. This is going to be glorious. He's going to be a Cy Young candidate. This is great. And Ryan, what happened this year? Because you lucked out.
Lucked out. You actually convinced me to take Glasnow.
And he still paid off for it. It took him. It paid off.
And so that's what I wanted. So we all know what happened with Glasnow. He looked like he was going to blow 150 innings out of the water. And I had that kind of phantom IL stint around the All-Star break, which we all knew was kind of BS, but then a non-phantom IL stint, which eventually cost him the entire season. It's the elbow, right? Yes. The elbow soreness, whatever that means. So it's another Dodger starting pitcher injury. So yes, like I technically, like if that didn't crop up for 2-3 more starts, you would have won this one. But I think the bigger takeaway, because Glasnow was such a polarizing pitcher, still finished 27th on the Razzball player rater. What obviously wasn't the 27th starting pitcher off the board. Probably, you know, when we were talking about this, it was more earlier in draft season when Glass was maybe the 10th pitcher off the board. If you take the number 10 starting pitcher and he returns 27th, it's not great, but it's not the end of the world. It's not the end of the world. And again, you had a month to replace Glasnow, and depending on what you did, it may not have even skipped a beat. So I don't know. Glasnow in general, for as polarizing he was, looked like he was going to blow his ADP out of the water, but then got hurt. But still, you know, I wouldn't say I take it every time, but he was not a disaster.
Yeah, most starts of his career by 1, 14 more innings pitched most of his career. This one stung a 25.5% K to walk. Dude was filthy. 189 batting average against. Elite stuff, but I will not be drafting him at all until I see any sign of health, because he doesn't care about throwing out his elbow. He's mentioned it before, and gonna give me some serious trepidation moving forward. But man, yeah. I thought I had this one with the Dodgers, and it went up in flames right before my eyes. So yeah, that's fine.
And I am much more, two things on before we kind of move on. I'm much more hesitant to take Glasnow, obviously now, because he's ending the season hurt, as opposed to last year when the injury was front loaded and looked really good to end the season. But Glasnow still finished ahead of guys like Max Fried, Freddie Peralta, your boy Logan Webb, Luis Castillo, Kevin Gausman, Zach Gallen, still finished ahead of those guys on the player rater. And I feel like Glasnow kind of gets a bad rap because he got hurt and everyone said he was going to get hurt. I think people that drafted Glasnow kind of drafted him knowing he'd get hurt at some point, but you were hoping it would be 140, 150, 160 innings and not, you know, 80. So I don't
completely
know.
Agree with that. It's also interesting in kind of that regard. You mentioned Glasnow pitching better than all those guys. And I was talking with Ben earlier. I was looking at the just pitcher leaderboard on the season. And it's funny because we think like you got to draft these aces early to anchor down your team. If you just go by war, that's not always the end all be all, but top pitchers, Chris Sale, late pick. Scooble, middle pick, I guess. Same with Sale. They're both middle, but not like early picks. Zach Wheeler was elite. Cole Reagan's probably went around Glasnow, give or take. Cease went a little later. Lugo off the board. Christopher Sanchez later. So like my point is is there's a lot of later picks that actually paid off in the starting pitching world compared to these early guys, which is very, very interesting as well. So
Ronel Blanco was the 13th starting pitcher on the Player Radar this year.
There you go. That says a lot about what you need to know, because he probably wasn't drafted in most leagues. So good call on that. All right. This is like a trend. It's almost like you put these in an order to make it sound fun for
so, yeah, hold on. Yeah, where am I at? I'm up 3-1. We got to – what's the count? 3-1.
3-1.
We're not stopping the count. We're keeping going.
Yeah, if it's like Mike Tyson punch out, I'm starting to get wobbly, around here.
Cover your ears.
Yep. Number 5 bet on the board. And this one was an interesting one, too, because throughout the year, it's kind of wavered a bit back and forth. Andrés Muñoz versus Pete Fairbanks. They're kind of getting drafted next to each other. So as a relief pitcher show, Ryan was a big Muñoz fan because he's a Mariners homer. And I was going, no, I'll take Pete Fairbanks in this matchup. I'll take Fairbanks. We like Fairbanks. Fairbanks got hurt. That ended that whole shebang. Muñoz got hurt but then came back. So, Ryan, what do you have on this one as you picked up another W?
Yeah, this is another dub for Team Bloom. I mean, Muñoz did, even though Fairbanks got hurt, much better ERA, much better whip, more strikeouts. Fairbanks, they ended up 23 and 22 saves. And so Fairbanks probably would have gotten over 30 if he didn't get hurt, and Muñoz wouldn't have gotten much more because he was hurt, but it didn't miss a whole lot of time. This was more just I really liked Muñoz entering the season, and I think that was accurate, even though, and this is kind of I can't believe Andrés Muñoz only had 22 saves for the Seattle Mariners.
Crazy.
And it wasn't because, mostly it was not because of like a fractured bullpen and like they had other closers. Muñoz was the guy. The Mariners went, I think, 6 weeks with one save opportunity, like in the late summer. And that's just something you can't predict. So like I think the Muñoz pick was pretty strong. Obviously the skills were elite, the ratios were awesome. The 22 saves was really just the damn Mariners cannot hit the ball. And I didn't know they'd be that bad entering the season, but you also can't predict that stuff, how often save opportunities are going to come up. So we'll see what happens with Muñoz next year. I took him in our 2025 too early meatball. So new manager in town. Don't know who that will be in Seattle next year, but I would have to think Muñoz is the guy. And then you would also have to think there are more save opportunities that just come up. I don't think they go through an epic run of 6 weeks with one save op again. So
no, I'm with you on that one. The save op thing, and it what is impressive, and this is why Muñoz finished so much higher, and kind of goes back to also when we're talking closers, a lot of people want to draft just for saves, and I get it because that's a category, and that's what you want your closer to do. But like you mentioned, a 2.12 ERA, Fairbanks 3.57, 0.96 whip compared to 1.17. Like, those are big gaps when you think of the closers and the amount of innings and all that good stuff. And then the biggest one here, 77 strikeouts and 59 innings pitched versus 44 strikeouts and 45 innings strikeouts. Yeah. Like, that is tremendous stuff. We talked about it. I think like the year Diaz went nuts, his amount of strikeouts. Class A doesn't get as many strikeouts, but still has the ratios with the volume. But that strikeout appeal is just takes Muñoz to a whole nother level when it comes to this type of thing. So definitely going to – I'll tip my cap on that one. That was one of those that was pretty good. Like, if Fairbanks stays healthy, he probably blows him out of the water and saves. But Muñoz still smokes him in pretty much everything else. Like, I don't see that changing a whole lot. So,
and Fairbanks did have, and if we're looking back on the season, the press conference of the year, I thought. You remember that when they asked him why he was struggling?
He
was like,
"Get a few, man."
Yeah, he is a character.
He was on the Rose rotation, and he's talking about it. That dude is, it's not a show. That is who he is. He like plays Legos. He watches cartoons with his kid. Like, he is that dude. It's pretty impressive stuff.
An all encompassing type of suck was the quote of the year when they asked why, you know, what specifically was wrong, and he was like, "It wasn't one type of suck. It was an all encompassing type of suck." Yeah. That was good stuff.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive stuff. So yeah, I'll tip my cap to you on that one. See where it goes with what was that?
4-1. We are dominating. And
this is when things take a turn. Next up, if we want to talk bloodbath, This is where the conversation begins. This is like the Yankees taking on the Bad News Bears stuff. This is blow up. This is Barry Bonds versus any pitcher back in the day. This is what you don't want to do. Brandon Drury versus Ryan McMahon. I had Ryan McMahon.
Yeah, I had Brandon Drury, who I didn't even realize this was possible, but Brandon Drury finished in 1,286th place on the Razzball Player Rater.
Didn't even know it went that far. I thought they just kind of cut it off and said, your guy sucks, don't look any farther.
Yeah, that was an all-encompassing type of suck, was Brandon Drury. Just, I don't know, was a little bit hurt at the beginning, but I still need to go back and look at what was wrong here. I mean, I saw a guy who was middle and corner eligible coming off two seasons in a row of 20 plus homers, 274 batting average, 259 batting average each of the last two seasons, like entering 2024, and it just all fell apart. So I don't know. It's just one of those misses, I guess. But the good thing, for as much as this was a disaster, I apparently had Brandon Drury's forecaster box, so that's not good either, what I wrote in there.
Oh, that's great. Can we go back and look at that by chance? That would be great.
I think I'll
find it.
You're lobbying to get like two beers out of this bet, but this you're was not. You're only getting one. This is like match play where you birdie and I triple bogey. You're just getting one.
It's okay. We're looking this board up here. Okay, here it is. Brandon Drury, sneaky good.
You're gonna read the forecaster box?
Oh yeah, sneaky good. Given full time at bats over the past two seasons, spread over three organizations, no less. He's responded with remarkable consistency, above average power, passable batting average, mid 500 plate appearances at multiple positions. His repeated trick of outpacing X home run is curious to say the least, but no reason to think he can't pay it back.
What did I say? Remarkable consistency?
Yes, sneaky good. Sneaky good. Remarkable consistency.
Yeah, that's oh no, it wasn't me who wrote it. Michael in the chat says it was Brent Hershey.
It was the boss man. The boss man, even better.
Let's clip this one out of the pod so you get your writing gig again next year, Bubba. That backfired.
This is what happens when I listen to listeners on the fly. But
I assume Michael was right. It was mine. So I can't remember who I was.
And I could see you writing that, so that's why. As much as you liked him, I could see you writing
that. That's hilarious. That backfired on you, my friend.
Story of my life, Ryan. Story of my life. Welcome to Thunderdome. You can blame
Cicchini. Don't worry.
Nah, what didn't backfire was Ryan McMahon still finishing 200th on the player radar and somehow smoking him, because I'll highlight the negatives here. McMahon hit 242, which is pretty much in line with the 242. That's one thing I said when I talked McMahon. If you just want a consistent line, this is what you get from Ryan McMahon. And batting average is in line. He had 20 home runs. He's had 23. But then 68 runs is a bit down. 65 RBIs was down. That was the bummer. What makes matters worse for Ryan McMahon, and he's a free agent in 2028. They have some interesting decisions to make in Colorado. His first half and second half, his first half, 272, 14 homers, 3 steals. Life is good. Really smoking Ryan in this bet. Second half, 188 with 6 home runs. Second half was atrocious for Ryan McMahon. It was really bad. So that's another thing to think about going forward. Like, he took care of Brandon Drury. No big deal. Business is business. But as a whole, Ryan McMahon took a massive step back in the second half of the season. It's one of those, was he playing hurt? Like, I'm curious on why things went so bad for Ryan McMahon. So, yeah, just throwing that out there.
I have nothing further. You're speechless. I'm speechless.
You're remarkably consistent. All right. That wraps up.
Not my words.
Yeah, I'm going to hear about that one later.
Not my words.
It's okay. That wraps up our
We want a nice podcast spot at First Pitch Arizona.
We'll be recording Sunday morning at 7:30, right outside the breakfast buffet, everybody. Come join the fun. That's your preseason bets. We had 6 preseason bets. We have 4 in-season bets. At the end of the preseason bets, Ryan leads 4-2. Four to two in this one.
Good shape.
Keep that in mind as we go forward. Now, want to talk bloodbath. Ryan, I'll give you the floor on this one. I had fun with you. You can have fun with this one.
Yeah, this one was a bloodbath. This must have been like a, I don't know where it came from, but basically, Bo Bichette versus O'Neill Cruz. This was an in-season one that came up sometime in May. It was a
bloom board where you're bombing on Bichette, and I said he's not as bad as you say he is, and he was.
There we go. So you could argue the injury card with Bo Bichette. Only had 218 plate appearances from May going forward, but hit .232, 3 homers, 2 steals. To O'Neill Cruz's .264 batting average, 18 homers, 19 steals, and 478 plate appearances. I don't know why you were so down on O'Neill Cruz. Maybe it was more just rebounding on Bichette, which was I think a proper take at the time. I mean, at the time the guy had a bad month, and it's like, this is someone who, you know, leads Major League Baseball in hits with that type of track record before 2024. So I get it. But I don't know. I just thought something was extremely wrong with Bichette. And so I think Cruz was kind of like I wasn't really that high on O'Neill Cruz. I think it was just like a guy who was on the board at the same position. And I was so far down on Bichette and you were higher on him. It's just like, oh, let's pick O'Neill Cruz as the baseline. So I went with that. And I don't know. Cruz didn't like set the world on fire, but he was fine.
Still, that's a good like line. 264, 18, 19, and 478 plate appearances. And I don't know if Cruz will ever stay healthy for 600 plus plate appearances. That's the bummer. He's just proven he's having issues with that. But man, like to think about the potential of a 25-25 guy, that still plays out pretty well. And it's only fitting that Bichette ended the season with a broken middle finger as he leaves all fantasy players there to remind us of how bad things were. But yeah, I remember this one. It was a bloom board. I can't remember what stats we were specifically looking at, but it was a I was buying the bounce back on Bichette and thinking, you know, if he gets healthy, he can definitely outperform O'Neill Cruz. And I don't know. I'll probably still take the dip on Bichette in drafts this upcoming year because it's going to be nice. But,
so it's interesting. Like I think I would rather, and we have no idea what their ADP is, but O'Neill Cruz will go much, much earlier than Bo Bichette next year. I'd probably buy the dip on Bichette at the price over O'Neill Cruz. I think two things that O'Neill Cruz probably won't repeat next year is 599 plate appearances and a .259 batting average. A really high BABIP, struck out 30% of the time. I know this is like a super athletic guy who could probably hold a pretty high BABIP, but it just does not scream .260 hitter to me.
Yep, totally agree. So we'll see how that one plays out, but that brings the wonderful scoreboard to 5-2.
Let's go.
The route is on, folks. The route is on, but don't wait. What's that sound? That's the big man in Miami, Jake Berger, coming to town. Next bet we have here, Ryan, Jake Berger versus George Springer, second half of the season. Kind of like how I liked Bichette bouncing back. You could not give up on George Springer. And I said some very down things on Springer. And he had a couple weeks where he was awesome. Trust me, he did. In the end, it wasn't close, Ryan. It wasn't close. As Jake Berger's second half, for those that somehow slept under a rock, .279 with 19 home runs. He even stole a base, Ryan. Even stole a base. 41 RBIs, 38 runs scored, 19 home runs in the second half of the season, 19 home runs while hitting .279. And that is a heck of a visual that Ryan just put out there. That is beautiful.
I used to eat these as a kid. Frozen burgers. They were called Bubba Burgers.
That's outstanding. I need this in my life. That is outstanding. That's fitting right there. Thank you for that. Appreciate it.
No, you crushed. You crushed. Yeah. I mean, Jake Berger, dude, the second half, that was epic. Did you list out his stats while I was trying to pull up a picture?
Yeah, of Bubba Berger? 279, 19 home runs. I said 19 home runs like 16 times, I think. 41 RBIs. He absolutely destroyed things when it came in, and he did it in South Beach. I remember people said last year, like, oh, full season in that ballpark, blah, 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 blah. It did not matter, folks. The dude's a beast. And I know we talked about it, Ryan. Like, he had the hurt groin, came back kind of early, yes, a lot of those things. And then we both started looking at him, and then he came up on a lot of bloom boards in the second half and started showing increased, like, quality of contact metrics, like a million things. Like, he might be healthy after the All-Star break. What a concept. And, yeah, there we go.
That was my thing with Berger. I distinctly remember this discussion. It was an oblique. It was intercostal oblique, muscle strain. Yeah. I believe that's the oblique, but it missed 3 weeks in April, came back early May, and just, I don't think was right. And so I remember this saying, it's like one of two things is going to happen with Jake Berger. It is oblique continues to linger in the second half, and he just keeps doing this, or Berger did what he did. I don't know why I was so high on George Springer looking back. Like, what was I? Well, I'm not going to ask you what I was thinking, but a total disaster of a season for George. I mean, George Springer was being cut around this time in season, and had like a shortly after we made the beer bet, had a kind of a little bit of a run, but then for Springer, .218 batting average, like that's tough. Still had 18 homers, 16 steals, so the power speed was decent, but especially considering how bad the start was for Springer. But I don't know, this is someone who's going to be 36 next season, plate skills are in decline, was no longer leading off for Toronto. Like, things are not trending well for Mr. Springer.
Yeah, no, that's the age concerns me a ton, because he had a couple nice weeks there, like you're talking about, and then it just kind of disappeared again, kept leading off. It was bizarre with Springer, but I don't know, getting older, might be catching up with him eventually. We'll see. Probably, I don't even know if there's rumors they might not even bring him back because he costs so much money. So we'll see how that one pans out. But he's still under contract for a couple more years. I don't know if they have a choice in that matter. I know they'll try to move on. Stephen Crawford, our resident Toronto Blue Jay fan, the back end of Springer's contract was always going to be bad. Yeah, that happens with a lot of these old guys. Ask the Angels, with Pujols, ask the Rangers with Hamilton. Yeah, there's a lot of those that go around for sure. You pay for the success, and then you pay for the pain later. That's kind of how it goes. Unless you're Shohei Ohtani, where you get to pay $2 million a year. It's pretty nice.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, pretty nice. All right, number 9, one of our closest ones on the board. This was a doozy. Hunter Brown versus Pablo Lopez, second half ERA. We all know Ryan is our resident Pablo Lopez stan, and Pablo Lopez was not having a great start to the year, but the underlying metrics were great, and Ryan would not budge. So, Ryan, I'll give you the floor on this one. How did things play out?
Quite well for Mr. Pablo Lopez. First half ERA, the hell is it at? I think 5.11, I want to say. Hold on. Good. Yeah, 5.11 first half ERA for Pablo Lopez, 104 innings pitched in that first half. And I don't need to recant all the reasons why I was saying to hold strong on Pablo Lopez. Completely flipped the script in the second half, 81 innings of a .277 ERA. Would have won this bet if not for a 7 earned run game in his second to last start of the season as part of the Minnesota Twins collapse down the stretch. But all of these starts count. So despite the 7 earned run outing, Pablo Lopez still, I think, absolutely shoved and turned out to really not have that bad of a season. Ended up with a 4.08 ERA, you know, not great, but 1.19 whip, 198 strikeouts, 15 wins. Like, those wins in K's, that's huge. So better than, well, probably right around Glasnow. I think they're right next to each other in the player rater or whatever that's worth. I don't know. Lopez in the second half was freaking awesome, but not quite as good as Hunter Brown.
And this was a fun one because Ryan mentioned the 5+ ERA of Lopez in the first half. We all know Hunter Brown's horrible start, even with a nice finish to the first half, still had a 4.39 ERA in the first half of the season. So, well, it was lower than Lopez, but both, you know, we saw the goods behind these guys. And we're like, it can't be this bad. But I was a believer more so in Hunter Brown, because I guess I also was a Hunter Brown believer in draft season. Ryan was a Pablo Lopez believer in draft season. And if you look at the second half for Hunter Brown, 2.26 ERA in the second half of the season, compared to Pablo Lopez's 2.77. So both were outstanding. Like, I'm looking at the second half lines from Hunter Brown. It's really impressive, considering strikeout rate's pretty much the same. Walk rate dropped 1.5%. He only had like an 18% K to walk, nothing crazy, but 2.21 batting average against. BABIP dropped 30 points, which is tremendous. Had a 3.12 xFIP, 2.75 FIP. Dude just took it to a different level, which was great to see from a young pitcher. And the biggest thing for him is he saw his home run to fly ball go from 15.6 to 7.7. Kept the ball in the yard, which changed things because he saw his ground ball rate just come up a little bit. But keeping the ball in the yard, going deeper into games because of his success keeping the ball in the yard, Hunter Brown showed some big boy stuff. I think Pablo Lopez is still the better pitcher. I will acknowledge that, Ryan. I think he is the better pitcher. But when it came down to our bets, he was not the better pitcher. And I wonder, maybe not. I wonder if that last start skewed anything, because he got shelled on that last start. I doubt one start would matter to that extent.
Lopez had a sub 2 ERA in the second half before that blow. I mean, 7 earned runs in a half season, that's going to destroy your ERA when it's that low. So,
yeah.
But hey, they all count. They all count. So well done, my friend.
And you know what else counts? It's 5-4 if you're looking at the board right now. 5-4. Don't call it a comeback, because it's not, folks. Bet number 10.
I'm going to cut you off. This is one you were extremely, extremely confident, borderline cocky about.
Oh, me cocky? Listeners, I never get cocky. Where do we get that?
Not even borderline, I guess.
Let's be fair. We did like a quick recap of our bets like a month ago or so. You were even conceding this one.
Yeah, you said right. I almost conceded it on, you know, when I was doing the show sheet today, because I was like, there's no way. So we did on August 6th.
Ryan texted me and said we went 5-5. And then it changed. Yeah. So, Ryan, sorry, the floor is yours now.
No, you know, upon further review, the call is overturned.
Just like in Miami versus Virginia Tech.
Yeah, was overturned. Except this time, and for our show, is overturned correctly. But that's a different
indisputable evidence.
This is indisputable evidence, like actual stats on the page. Our bet was Will Smith versus Austin Wells. We made it on August 6th, and it was just interesting. I forget how it came up, but it was just how bad Will Smith had been over the summer. He's one of those guys who almost like a Gene Segura all-star, except he was really good in April. So you just really forgot about Will Smith and how bad he was every single month after that. However, wins this bet over Austin Wells with a slight recovery in September. Will Smith hit .244 with 5 homers, 43 runs plus RBI and a steal from August 6th through the end of the season. Austin Wells, who we thought was going to run away with this one, did absolutely nothing in September, kind of quietly. So Austin Wells only hit .204 with 5 home runs, same number as Will Smith, 38 runs plus RBI, so only 5 fewer than Smith and no steals. So Will Smith actually won this with an okay September compared to Austin Wells, who did nothing.
Yeah, Austin Wells forgot how to play baseball and ironically kept hitting fourth for the Yankees, which was entertaining. Like, kept hitting fourth every game, kept doing his thing, or at least most games. He platooned a little bit, but they kept throwing him out there. I was telling Ryan, like, I didn't look at the numbers that closely, but there's a reason the last 2 or 3 FAB episodes I kept saying, pick up Joey Bart, go pick up Victor Caratini. Like, I was dropping Austin Wells in a lot of formats because the slump was happening. Did I think it was this bad? No. Did not think it was this bad, but I knew it was not great, to put it nicely. I didn't think Will Smith was doing anything, though. That was the part that confused me. I was like, okay, Austin Wells is struggling, so be it. To know Will Smith actually hit, you know, what he did in September, albeit not like world beating, still was good. And what really surprised me, honestly, he had more plate appearances than Austin Wells And I think
that is weird.
I think it was more so he was platooning like every day with Austin Barnes, but Austin Barnes had the DL or the IL twice with a fractured foot or a fractured toe. So those just 10 games alone, I think, ended up making Barnes play more games. And that might have pushed him over the edge there, weirdly enough. But yeah, Will Smith got there. Still not a fan of Will Smith. Not going to go down that road. Still not a fan. But he got there. I'll concede you beat me 6-4 on this one.
Real quick, I don't know if you have the player rater up. Where did Will Smith finish among catchers?
I do not have the player rated around. I'll pull it up right now.
Take a guess. I know the answer. It's a question.
Where did Will Smith finish at catchers for 2024?
Yeah.
Oh, catcher's position was not as great as people think, so it's probably better than I'm going to give him credit for. I'll say 7th.
Okay. 5th.
Yeah. I figured the fact you asked me, it means he probably finished closer to his ADP catcher-wise than he should have.
Yeah, but that's I think, crazy. I didn't think it'd be that high.
That's a detriment to catchers more than anything.
That's a good point. Yeah, because Will Smith really did. So Will Smith ended with a .248 batting average, 20 home runs, 75 RBI, 77 runs as a catcher. Like that is pretty damn good. But Will Smith still finished for as bad as he was for 4 months out of the season, 4.5 months out of the season, still finished 5th. Adley Rutschman actually finished 7th. That's kind of wild. Yeah,
he was not good at all. Like I just did looking at the catcher's leaderboard on Fangraphs just statistically. I just did minimum 50 plate appearances to highlight some. It'll still weed out most of them. But like your top catchers based on, let's go off WRC plus, not war. War's kind of a, because Patrick Bailey's third. Okay, we'll go WRC plus. Well, if you go by 50, let's up this because Adrian Del Castillo is number
one. Patrick Bailey's second. Yeah.
According to we're doing WRC plus, at least 100 plate appearances. Wilson Contreras is first. William Contreras is second. So there's a bet for you. You were Team Wilson. William was still number one on the player radar, I guarantee you.
Yes.
But like Ivan Herrera was third compared to WRC plus. Joey Bart was fourth. Cal Raleigh, Yainer Diaz, Sal Perez, Stallings, Caratini, and Stevenson. Will Smith was 11th on this board. So it still shows, like, I just listed those names because look at some of those guys that are on. Jacob Stallings, WRC plus, was 8th.
Yeah.
Like, the catcher's position was rough. It was a rough, rough position this season. And Will Smith, yes, he finished well. But like I said, you're still going to have to pay for him next year. And I ain't paying for him. So I'll stand that ground. So 6-4.
Michael's right. There was a. Go ahead. We're talking too much catchers. Go ahead.
No. There's a clear top four. Raleigh had 34 homers and 100 RBIs. That's ridiculously good. And he actually hit for a decent average this year. I just had it up here. Cal Raleigh hit .220, and that's decent for Cal Raleigh. If you get 34 and 100, you'll take the .220 right now.
Oh, absolutely. Yep. And then it was Salvador Perez and Yainer Diaz who started off terribly. That was that top four. Then a big gap, down to Will Smith. So more to come on our catcher review pod shortly.
Yeah. Talked a lot of catchers today. I'm pretty pumped about this. Like I'm ready to run through a wall, like Kool-Aid Man style. This is good stuff. But you won, Ryan, 6-4. Congratulations. I'm not a sore loser or anything. I'll give you your props. Would you like the floor to thank the fans, what would you like? The floor is yours.
I'd like to thank just kind of my genetics, my DNA for superior intelligence here to be able to take you down in the beer bet episode. It's actually quite poetic that your drink of choice is High Noons and mine are IPAs. High Noons come in 4 packs and beers come in 6 packs. So we could just get each other a pack. Look at you. Conveniently packaged so we can buy each other a pack and take a picture and start getting to work in Arizona.
Yeah, we'll have to either do it at the bar or at the course. Probably be drank before we get to the course because that's on Sunday. but it'll be taken care of. Bets will be acknowledged, and you get an extra drink. You have 7 drinks compared to my 4 because of a listener and whatnot.
Sunday will be a good day. But luckily I don't fly out until think like noon on Monday. So we're golden.
Beautiful, beautiful. So fun stuff there. Real quick, I'll get your thoughts. Game one or day one of the playoffs. What do you have any initial thoughts? Padres, Michael King was just insane.
Yeah.
You saw the Brew Crew get smoked. You saw the Tigers get a big win. Royals get a win. Fun baseball.
Fun baseball. And outside of the Mets Brewers game, I think the highlight was just to steal a quote from Nick Pollock, ace is going to ace.
Yes.
So when we saw Michael King do his thing, Tarik Skubal looked awesome, had a scare early in that game, had a comebacker off his non-pitching hand and got checked out, but obviously was fine. Corbin Burnes, in a losing effort, pitched extremely well, which is tough for Baltimore because that's the reason Baltimore signed Corbin Burnes was for today. And they got a grand total of 0 runs for Corbin Burnes, but a lot of that was because of Cole Reagans on the other side. So I think the big theme of day one was just awesome pitching performances from most of the teams that won and some that didn't. I will say that Tigers game, man, Jason Hayward smoked. Ninth inning was just absolutely nuts. Yeah. You've got Jason Foley getting taken out in the ninth for Bo Brisky.
Bo Brisky, baby.
My God, who's throwing 100, of course, out of the bullpen now, which is just crazy. Like number four. Hayward just with two outs in the ninth, two guys on. Hayward smoked one to first base right down the line, but right at Torque. So it was a crazy, crazy day. It was fun. We get 4 more on Wednesday, so I'm looking forward to that.
Yep, should be a fun one to get Freed versus Musgrove for the evening. That should be fun seeing what the Braves do with their normal pitching in place on that one. And Hunter Brown takes the bump against, I believe, a bullpen game, the opener slash the way the Tigers roll type scenario.
What did Hinch say? It's going to be Skubal and then chaos.
Chaos. What's worked for us for a couple months.
Yeah. So, you know, yeah. He's not wrong.
No, he's not. And then Lugo versus Eflin, that's actually going to be better. I think people would have thought on April 1st. That's actually a sneaky game. And then it gets interesting you get Manaea and Montas. Manaea Montas should be an interesting one.
It's not Saivali on Wednesday?
No, he gets game three. He gets game three. So it's Montas, Manaea. So it'd be some fun matchups. Fun matchups. Any predictions, or you just want to wrap it up there?
No predictions. Mike, you were quite adamant. I'm not going to victory lap one game, but you were quite adamant. Your Astros going deep in the AL, and I picked the Tigers. So we'll see. It is Hunter Brown against a bullpen game, game two. So we'll see.
Just like March Madness, I just want my team to win it all in advance, and the Padres are up 1-0. So we're good in that regard.
Did you check any of your pennant?
Yes, checked them all. Checked them
all. I did too. Not good so far, but
no, not good either. But not as much Michael King as I thought I had for all the Padres that I have. I'll say that much. But did have a few, and he put up like 60 something points. That guy, that was ridiculous. Ridiculous stuff.
Yeah, Steven says, can't believe it's a bullpen game in game two of the postseason. Agreed. And can't believe Bo Brewski. Closing out game one of the postseason, which is just
and bonkers. I hate to be a buzzkill, but it'll be a bullpen game in game three too. So get ready for that one. You're going to get some Olsen and Herder. Herder's been pretty good behind an opener the whole time, so it'll be, I think, better than people think, but we'll see. And then Michael C, I wonder if we'll get any copycats next season, starters going less often or fewer innings. It's just still so tough with limited rosters. You can only have so many guys to open and come back. I guess it makes it difficult. It's a taxing on the bullpen, basically, a taxing situation. But all right, we'll wrap it up there, Ryan. Another fun one in the books. Congratulations on your big W, 6-4 on that one. We'll have more bets to go as usual in 2025 because that's what we do on this show. I like to stir up some stuff and have some fun. So we'll do that. We'll be back with you guys Thursday night with the first annual Bubba and the Bloomies Awards, Fantasy Baseball Awards. It's going to be awesome, folks.
It's going to be one of two things. It's either going to be a complete dud or it's going to be awesome. Hopefully the latter. We've got some ideas cooking in the lab, so we'll see.
It's going to be like 8 to 10 awards, give or take. We'll see what gets cut, like the Grammys and everything. And then make sure you follow us on Twitter, because we will put out some things that we want your guys' input on who you guys think deserve certain awards and whatnot. So we'll play that on the show as well. The Dundies is a perfect comparison to this Stephen Crawford. Michael Scott said it best. This is going to be very, very true. So I'm with you on that. It's going to be fun. All right. Until Thursday, make sure you follow Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I am at BD Intric. Until next time, this was Bubba and the Bloom, episode 174. Catch y'all later.